Well, hello, everybody. Looks like we've got a few people on here, so I'm going to go ahead and get started in the essence of time. Welcome to our webinar. This one is on the safeguarding our future, basically how to keep kids safe on the internet. We know that's near and dear to everyone's heart and has been for years. We actually had an article, I think last summer, in our newsletter about internet safety, and it, you know, sparked a lot of discussion and questions. So we thought we'd dig into that a little bit more here on this webinar. We have a special guest joining us today, so we'll go into his interests here in a little bit. But we decided that, you know, it's more fun to listen to other people that are experts too, instead of just us all the time. So welcome to the webinar. Just a little bit about us, as I see we've got a few more joining, so I'm going to go slowly on this. A little bit about me, I'm Lisa Johnson. I am the owner, and I like to call myself the Chief Happiness Officer here at ABC. Who wants to be executive or technical, or I want to be happy? So I am the Chief Happiness Officer of ABC. I got a degree in elementary education from Purdue University. I have been doing IT services for many, many, many years. If you are around long enough, you will remember that, some of you might remember me from being around as a teenager back in the 80s and 90s running cables, or actually I used to clean out computers as part of our managed services. We'd come clean out your computers. We don't do that anymore, but they don't suck in quite as much dirt as they used to, but I'm still in this business and love it. I do a lot with client experience here and project management. I've been doing that for about 25 years in my career, either here or other places. And I really, really focus on that. So that's something that's really important to me. I grew up in the library IT business. I talked a little bit about that. I remember back when patrons would steal the mice balls out of the mice, you know, when you had rollerball mice and you'd have to replace those. I remember, you know, CDs, putting them in without the cases and that sort of thing. So I've been doing this a long time. We have some libraries in the ABC family that we put their first computers in, and we have put all of their computers in. So we really appreciate them. I actually got to spend a little time down at Shelbyville Public Library this weekend working on a project, and it was just very interesting to go back and remember when that was original, the Carnegie building, and they built on a couple times and remodeled and added buildings. And it's just fun to watch the history of different libraries around the state. So that's something that I really enjoy. I have on here, I'm a lover of all libraries. You'll see in the picture here next to Brian and I is one of the original Carnegie libraries in Washington, D.C. We were out there for a conference last year, and of course we had to go find any Carnegie libraries we could. So this was one of them that we found. So Brian is actually not on with me. I won't go over all of his bio, but just so you know, we run this business as a team. I call him the smart guy, and I'm the happy girl. So he has a degree from Purdue, and he is definitely our technical and security person, you know, for anything tough goes to him. So we'll leave it at that with him. A little bit about ABC. If we've been in business about 50 years, just over 50 years. We've been working with libraries and their IT services for pretty much since libraries started having IT services. You know, firewalls were our biggest thing initially, and then networking and that sort of thing. So we also work with business customers too. So if you have businesses in your area that need IT services, we do that too. We provide risk assessments and technology alignment. This time of year, we do a lot of budgeting so that, you know, helping you figure out what next year's budget looks like, what you should spend your technology budget on, new things. And I'm sure JD, as I introduce him later, could talk all about the new security threats that are out there, and new layers of security that we need to add on top of what we were already doing to secure both the patrons and the staff at a library. So that's a lot of what we do. We have a new techforlibraries.com website. If you guys want to check that out, it's still kind of a work in progress, but our real goal there is to take what we know from the business sector and the library sector over the last few years and apply it so that you guys have one place to go for that. So it is definitely a work in progress. We have been working hard on it, but you'll see changes. So check back often on that. The other thing I wanted to do is if you are an existing customer, if you can post in the chat, this will get you used to using the chat, how many years you've been a customer of ours. Also, that leads me to just a little bit of meeting logistics. This will be recorded. You'll get a recording. It will come out probably tomorrow along with LEUs. Those will come out probably by the end of the week. And then we will be utilizing, you all are muted, which is great in a library sometimes, especially as summer reading kicks off, but we'll be utilizing the chat for questions. So keep that in mind. I did talk to JD a little bit before this and he is happy to have questions. So just pop those in the chat and we'll stop. This is a kind of a working session. So we don't have any questions. Next up, our guest speaker with us. Brenda attended a webinar a few months ago, I guess, and we were really impressed with what we heard. So welcome, JD Henry. JD is with the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, say that fast. That is kind of actually what all of the technology companies look to for information on what we should be doing to keep our customers safe. So I'll let him introduce himself a little bit more, but he's with the Region 5, which covers Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, and Wisconsin. So JD, I will turn it over to you at this point. We are glad to have him here to speak to you guys a little bit more about cybersecurity and keeping children safe. So welcome.
Hi. So a little bit different picture on the here live than is on the picture. If you saw the bottom of my bio, I just got back from some military reserve duty. So a little bit more about me. I've been in the DOD since 2000. So about 23 years now. That's a scary thought to think back on. But I joined Department of Homeland Security 5 years ago. And when CISA was just now being established in 2018, because there was a need for greater focus on cybersecurity and risk management across those sectors of critical infrastructure. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to share my screen so that you guys can all see the slides, which I'll make sure that everybody can get a copy of. And Lisa, if you wouldn't mind, can you tell me whether or not you see my screen?
I do. Perfect.
Okay. And I won't be able to see the chat, but if you get a chat question, go ahead and just interrupt me. I will just keep talking. And I don't like to do that. For one, I don't even like to hear my own voice for too long. So I know that it can be a little taxing on everybody else. So we can always take those breaks, have some discussions, be able to talk through. I want to make sure that you get as much value out of this as you can. But more importantly, if you, before you even start, you'll get my contact information at the end of it. If your library or any of your other organizations want to talk further on how we can support partner from the federal librarian, I provide a lot of resources in my advisory capacity for what people are looking for. So that's really the best days in my job. And you'll kind of see that as I progress through.
Great.
So first, thanks again to Lisa, Brian, and Brendan for Brenda for inviting me here today. It is exciting. These are some of the better days that I get to spend in the job. As you can imagine, I get some pretty dark days that I have to work through as the cybersecurity advisor. But just a quick agenda of the different things that I'm going to go through. And I promise I won't read slides to you unless if I do read a slide to you, it's probably important though. But who is CISA? So underneath the Department of Homeland Security, there are several components. So U.S. Customs Immigration, you have FEMA, you have the Secret Service, you have Transportation Security Administration, the newest kid on the block. And again, as I mentioned before, since 2018, we've had the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. We have a lot of different arms. Cybersecurity is right there foremost in front of it, but that doesn't really necessarily define the agency itself. It is a large part of what we do, but we also do a lot in the realm of physical security and other homeland security aspects to be able to make sure we can secure what is our nation's critical infrastructure. Our libraries fall in under one of those 16 defined sectors, either through the K-12 or education facilities, or through government resources, government facilities. So everybody here, absolutely everything we talk about is applicable to you as a member of critical infrastructure. So anything I talk about, you're definitely included within the actual discussion. So whether or not it's you're concerned about cybersecurity, which is where I focus, or whether or not you're looking at how to better bolster physical security around. I have a counterpart with CISA who will come out and be able to do all types of different assessments on the physical infrastructure of your facility, of the parking lots, of your, anything. I don't want to speak for what he can do, but if you're interested in that, again, you don't want the cyber guy trying to tell you about physical security. There's no reset to previous save point or any of those things. So I would let Steve, I would introduce you to Steve Braniarczyk for that, who's my counterpart here in the state. But we do have this mission and vision statement. So your obligatory slides on what our beliefs are here. And then, so what does a cybersecurity advisor actually do? We do a lot to prepare for bad days, and we do a lot to respond to bad days. So in the DoD, we would call it the boom. You know, everybody's going to have that bad day or that Kevin McAllister moment. I like to be able to focus. The best days are like today. I get to focus on left side of that timeline where we're doing the education, awareness, preparedness, and making sure that everybody is a hard target for some kind of adversary who means to do you harm. Unfortunately, bad things happen to good people every day. And the bad days are when I'm responding or helping coordinate through an incident response with individuals who have been victimized in a cybersecurity incident. And we're trying to help them in the response, recovery, and reconstitution of their networks. So we work both sides of that boom moment. And we try to be advocates within the community. So we are a federal agency, but we are not your typical Beltway-centric. We're not, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I live just south of Indianapolis. We live and work in the communities that we support. So we have a very vested interest to be able to do that. So we're regional entities. So while I have six different states that I could be a part of, I focus on Indiana. But I'm also supervisory over the state of Illinois, so my counterpart's there. So I have two states that I focus on, but primarily I'm the only advisor, aka the best advisor in Indiana. So that's where I spend most of my time. So when we talk about libraries and government facilities, but libraries and specifically, what kind of threats could you potentially face, so the more commonly observed ones. So when we look at the libraries themselves, they are research institutions, which presents a unique set of challenges. Any type of research institution, K-12, academia, you're going to have networks that are meant to be able to go through and be able to access places to where normal businesses would normally have closed off. So an open research network can present additional issues, and depending on how it's configured and how it's secured, it can be safe. It can be done very, very well. Sometimes we do see some issues or misconfigurations or lack of segmentation that creates some additional issues and creates what we see here on the screen, the opportunity for an adversary to take advantage of any of these different. So phishing, I think most people are very familiar with what phishing is. It's an unsolicited email that's trying to entice you into doing something you normally wouldn't do. So click the link, provide contact information that you normally wouldn't provide or personal information. But any of those type of activities you get through email is the vector to be able to try to get you to reveal something is usually a phishing attempt. One of the results of that or other different types of attacks can be ransomware, where an attacker would then go through and encrypt your network and your systems and then demand some kind of monetary payment to be able to get the access key or a password to decrypt your systems. Social engineering, just being somebody trying to do more of reconnaissance and be able to gather information to do a more, to have a higher chance of success, to be able to execute an attack. So I'm asking about information about who is your managed service provider. So I know here that we can say that it's ABC Technologies. So now I know a little bit more information and I can do research on ABC Technologies and I can see how they do business and I can be able to gather and paint it, build this dossier of a potential profile for an attack victim. So social engineering is that information gathering, people just asking information that really they don't have any business asking. Accessing interested internet sites. Again, you're a research institution. You're there to be able to allow people access to knowledge and through cyber means. If you have computers, being able to have access to those untrusted sites can put those computers at risk. So we see that quite a bit. And as well as personal devices accessing library networks. So if you are going to be able to open up to the internet, you should have a guest network, not the actual library network. But there's more ways that we can talk about individually how you're able to configure and secure those networks to be able to allow your guests to be able to do that and make sure you're still protecting library assets. Okay, so pause real quick. Anything in the chat so far?
No questions at this point. Although I like all those things that you said, because those are the things that I say over and over again.
Yeah, well, if you're hearing it more than once, it's probably important. So if the message is getting through, that's great. I don't mind where you get it from as long as you get it. So how do we approach cybersecurity? There's a lot of different ways you can do it. First and foremost, you have to be aware that there's a risk out there. You can't take action without knowing there's a potential for risk in the first place. So just staying informed is really important. Those water cooler conversations or dinner table conversations, however you want to frame it, to be able to say that, hey, did you see this in the news today? We're going to talk a little bit about social media. Today, the Surgeon General came out with an article and a report that said that the social media is not safe for children. It's a very interesting article. I'm still working through it all, but I'm trying to break it all apart. But that was from the U.S. Surgeon General saying they went through pretty extensive data to see, and they don't believe that children should be have access to social media. So we're going to be aware of risks, and we have those conversations, and we can make informed decisions. Here, we want to train our employees and our guests because training is usually what's defeated. It's usually not the systems or the software or the applications. It's usually the user because users are trusting. Users are always wanting to be able to be supportive, and we need to make sure that they're aware and they're wary of those requests. Our endpoint security, antivirus software, keeping that up to date. Using strong passwords, making sure that when we can, the very last one, which is double your login protection, that is going to be the multi-factor authentication. When you have the ability to turn that on, please turn it on. I know it's an extra step. It's a little bit of a hassle, but it imposes so much cost on an attacker that they usually lose interest and move on to another victim that's an easier, softer target. Backing up data. If you do have a bad day, the worst days are when it's like, well, we don't really have any backups, JD. So what do we do now? I said, well, we don't recover. We kind of have to rebuild. So we have to pretty much start from scratch at that point. Controlling physical access, making sure that people can't get access to the server cabinets or some of the other systems or even in the libraries. Being able to manage and be able to look at the actual physical spaces. There's things called keystroke loggers, where I can put a small little USB device that plugs in where, and then the keyboard would plug into that instead of the actual system itself. And it'll log every keystroke, usernames, passwords, the URLs they're attending. I can retrieve that. And now I have all the keystrokes that user generated while operating on that system. When we talk to strangers on the internet, we always want to play hard to get, you know, make them work for it. Don't be so eager to be able to answer questions or be as helpful to people of those online personas because you don't really know who's on the other side. Thinking before you act. Most phishing or online attempts will play off human emotions, elements. They will play off your fears. They will tell you that if you don't do this within this amount of time, it'll be a very short timeline, there'll be some kind of negative consequence. And they'll try to get you to act emotionally, and they will try to make you perform some type of action that you're going to regret later. And you realize, I really shouldn't have done that. So if you have to go in and log into your bank credentials, otherwise your bank account's going to be locked. And then they redirect you to a bogus site, but you don't pay attention because you're acting emotionally. That's how they'll get you. Or will be some natural disaster, and they'll play off your heartstrings saying that, hey, come here, be able to donate to victims of, say, Ukraine or hurricane victims or whatever natural disaster is happening. So they will and have played off your emotions and your fears to be able to get you to be able to act before you think about what you're doing. Protecting personal information, identity theft, persona theft, obviously still very effective for attackers. So it's still very rampant across the wild. And then I already talked about the multi-factor authentication. So these are basic ways that we can be able to build our cybersecurity, like arsenal toolkits and activities to be able to make sure we ingrain this. We want to look both ways before we cross the street when we're on the computer, right? So it hasn't been long in human history that we've actually had cars that move fast enough that would take a life. So it's been 100 years, maybe 100 plus years. So that's not very long in human evolution. But here, within decades, we've been able to go through and establish technology where we could have something that happens instantaneously that immediately can have a huge negative effect and consequence on our lives, to where it can crush businesses, it can crush your finances and so forth. So we always want to look both ways, right? So we want to take a little bit of time, not be in such a rush, and be able to act deliberately and well thought out type actions rather than emotions. So does that make sense? I hope. Everybody, I can't see head nods. It's always hard to read the room on these. So
it is. It's all it's open at all. Yeah, I don't see any questions. So, and I know that a lot of those, they see who's on and know them. So they've got some of those in place, I know.
Good.
So
yeah. Yep, and this isn't just for the library itself. I hope that you're employing these at home, your home offices, if you do work from home, in just your families. You want to protect those too. That's very important to us. So we want to make sure, because, you know, issues at home always transfer over. So we want to make sure that everybody's as secure as possible. When we talk about wireless networks, a lot of times we'll extend out our networks to a wireless footprint to be able to make ourselves more convenient, more attractive for the guests. Again, we talked about personal devices accessing. Well, wireless networks, we don't have as many wireless cafes anymore, but we do have a lot of free Wi-Fi, publicly accessible Wi-Fi, even at the libraries and others. So we want to make sure that we're securing our wireless networks the same way we would secure anything else. So here we can have some restricted access, make sure that we want to control the radius at which we were broadcasting so that you can actually gain the signal. The default passwords is always an issue. If I can pick up your router and turn it upside down and see what the password is, then I can access it. Or whether or not I can look up and say that, let's just see whether or not it's a Linksys router and what's the Linksys username and password. Oh, it's system administrator or administrator admin. And so I can go through and then I have access to that. So always change those default passwords. Please don't ever leave those in place. Again, whether or not at work or at home. There's people that just go around and they will war drive looking for open access points and test them. Encrypting the data on your network. So again, for wireless networks, you have a variety. Right now, the strongest encryption you can is the one I would default to, which would be your WPA2. So when you have access, I know that in the military, we've done a lot of work to crack those. I have a lot of difficulty cracking WPA2, but not web. So if you see WEP, it takes me about 2 minutes at most to be able to crack all of the encryption on that one. And I don't have to do anything other than run an automated program. Your SSIDs, we talked about firewalls. Thank you, Lisa, for installing the firewalls, your first line of defense. That'll control your boundary. You want to make sure that that is your boundary and you don't have exterior boundaries as well. So any of those back doors, you're securing those to the same level as well. Again, we talk about antivirus endpoint security. So if they are able to transverse your firewall, do you have internal protections on the systems themselves, keeping those systems up to date and patched? Again, there's something called a zero-day vulnerability where there's no patch for it. So there's this vulnerability that nobody has a fix for and people are out there searching for it. But that's not what we normally see from Homeland Security or CISA. We see unpatched systems, systems that have been vulnerable to vulnerabilities that vendors have had patches available for that have been open and accessible for years. People just haven't taken the time to update their system because it's an inconvenience. It requires a reboot. I'm in the middle of something. I'll postpone the reboot for another hour, for another week. The longer you do that, the more you're just kind of rolling the dice at the table because people are actively out there looking for it. And it's a very profitable business in the tunes of several hundred billion dollars per year for the FBI for the actual ransomware industry alone. Yeah. And then we want to make sure that if we're on untrusted networks and we're accessing a trusted network, we want to use a VPN if possible. So we always want to be able to connect through those in an encrypted tunnel. So that's where the VPNs come into play. And then whatever the provider is that you have for your wireless routers at home, look to see what's available. Look to see what options they have. Most providers will not enable all of their security features by default, because it makes it very difficult to be able to operate. So most of those are turned off. So there's a lot of native capabilities for security on your devices that are in your house that just aren't being utilized. So take a look and research that when you have a moment, and you might find that you're able to secure it pretty well just by turning on a couple of different features like multi-factor authentication or such.
Well, and I can second all those things on your slide there, JD, that we have seen in libraries. Couple things to note that we see in libraries a lot that we go through, guys, for those that are listening. You have a firewall in place, but nobody looks at the rules on it. So you don't have anyone looking through the rules to make sure that the rules are correct for what you need to have open. We've gone into libraries with fully managed by companies. Firewalls that are wide open because somebody who didn't know what they were asking for asked them to do it, and there wasn't anyone saying, are these rules the correct rules? So make sure you have someone in your library that's in charge of making sure the rules are the correct rules. That's just definitely something that we see pretty regularly when we go into other managed firewalls, when we take those over, that they're just wide open. So make sure you're checking those things. So. Yeah.
As we have guests coming in, social media, social networking sites, it's always heartbreaking, and you'll kind of see. So the worst days, and I like what I do here. I couldn't work for the FBI. I couldn't work for ICE or the Homeland Security investigations or any of those, because we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that you're going to see that, unfortunately, libraries and other publicly accessible internet access points are somewhat renowned for. And you're going to see some somewhat disturbing things, and social media kind of stems at a lot of it. But here you'll see some stats on social media that are from 2020. So we pulled these, in 2020 from 2019. We haven't pulled any lately because we had some skews because of a pandemic, if anybody remembers the pandemic. So a lot of our trends and everything that we had as far as stats just kind of blew up, and we couldn't really run trend lines anymore through the pandemic. But here, from what we can see, is that you're talking about close to 3.5 billion on social media. That number is much higher. Again, this was 3 years ago from pandemic. I'm sure that's exploded. 45% of the world's population are on social networks. 45%. I've got another slide, another stat here saying how many different users have internet access today. So digital consumers, 2.5 hours a day on social network. That's quite a bit of time to spend on a day. And then 69%, so 7 out of 10 have an account on at least one social networking site. So there is a huge area of opportunity for an attacker to be able to go through because there's a large population that use these. So when we start looking, How do you be able to protect yourself on these sites? Again, you've got four bullet points here, and I won't read slides, but never click and tell, right? So be very cautious about how much information you give on these sites. If I'm going to go through and I'm doing what we call a red team, or I'm doing a penetration test, or I'm trying to be an ethical hacker, I'm testing your environment to see whether or not I can access it to you. I'm doing it for good reasons, but even if I'm doing it for bad reasons, what am I going to do first? I'm going to find somebody within the organization. If I want to be able to target ABC Technologies, I go to their website and I start looking, and I can find, you know, Lisa Johnson there. I can immediately go through and start doing searching for Lisa Johnson and be able to try to find out as much as I want and how many different social medias. I can try to guess, you know, what her passwords are based off her interests. I can start building out. I can find out where, you know, she lives, where the organization is. I can go in there. I can look through their trash, which is dumpster diving, looking for any information I can if I'm a determined enough attacker. So I'm building a dossier. So we want to make sure social media is one of the very first sites we go to be able to access. So who can access your site? So is it just friends or friends of friends or anyone? So you can configure that to be able to see who has access to be that information you're sharing. If I want to break into your house, I can wait. I can follow you and wait to see when you're on vacation. You're not going to be there. I can see where you work. I can look at the normal work hours for where you go. So there's a lot of information out there that the internet will tell me about you just by what you post on social media. So be very cautious about that. And attackers are very aware of it. People like social media. I mean, again, they believe there's a sense of anonymity. Not really so much anymore. You can't erase what you put on the internet. There's a lot of information out there. They think that there's security built into the social media sites, when really, kind of the disclaimers, if you read through those, there's really not a whole lot in place. You're meant to secure your own site and what access, what information you share and what level of access. So there's a lot of different things here. And again, I promise not to read you slides, but the very last line there, you'll see predators. And we're going to talk a little bit about predatory activity on the internet. And this is where, from a library, people come because they're inherently curious. They're looking for resources, and they're going to come to a library for everything that they don't want to do at their own house. And I don't want to search this, especially if I'm a child. I don't want to be able to search on my phone, where my parents may monitor my browsing history or my search history or on my home computer, but maybe I'm just going to go to the library and look for it. Children, young adults, even adults have inherent curiosities, and they're going to find a way. Human nature is going to force them to find a way to satisfy that curiosity. A library is an opportunity to be able to do that, where they think there's some kind of anonymity to where it's not their system. So be very mindful that of what people's motivations are for using the library computers versus home computers. Again, sometimes it's they don't have access at home. Sometimes it's they don't want to use the access they have at home. So there's different scenarios you could find yourself in. Predatory relationships. Again, they can lead to a physical interaction, and they have, and they usually don't end well. We see a lot of, again, some of these resources you're going to see here in a little while will kind of tell the tale of how many of the dark days that we have to kind of work through, and how many could have been prevented if we would have had better cyber, you know, intelligence in the first place. So, okay, let me not. I get a little emotional when I talk about some of these. I'm just going to be completely honest. So when we protect ourselves online, again, I've got a whole list of different resources here that we can start looking at, to where you can see that limit the personal information you post. That's pretty standard. People don't need to know everything. And the people that do have a motive in place. And what is that motive? Ask them. Be very direct. Why do you want to know so much information about me? If you were to come up to me on the street and ask me that information, I would be cautious. Online, though, we feel a little bit more secure for some reason because they're not physically in front of us. So we're a little bit more apt to be able to tell them. It is a public resource. So anybody who's you're providing that information to there, it's likely going to spill over somewhere else, and they'll be able to see it as well. I know that Snapchat and some of those resources that people are like, oh, well, it goes away in 10 seconds. Well, I can still take a screenshot of everything you put within that first 10 seconds, and now it lives forever on my phone. So don't ever underestimate the ability to be able to circumnavigate a safeguard, or people's ability to be able to find ways to circumnavigate safeguards. I have the biggest difficulty in hospitals and engineering firms. Doctors, very smart. Engineers, very smart. Both are frustrating because every security control I put in place, they find a way to make things more efficient, make things faster, and circumnavigate every control I put in place for no ill intent, but to make life easier. So people will find that way to be able to do life hacks or whatever not, and put the systems at risk. So be wary of strangers. Be skeptical of everything you see on the internet. Not everything you see on the internet is true, if you can believe that. But be very skeptical of the information you see. Third-party applications. Please use your trusted app stores. Please use those, because new applications are being developed. They have backdoors. They have all kinds of malware embedded into them, Trojans, all these different things that we have to deal with day to day because of their malicious applications that were taken from probably legitimate applications and then embedded with malicious code to be able to peddle. So strong passwords, we've heard that one before. If we have to use passwords and we can't use multi-factor authentication, making sure we're using strong and unique passwords. You'll see here in a little bit on another slide, I'll talk more about that. Check your privacy policy. Please don't just click through it. I imagine on the library computers, you have a banner that says this is, you know, what's acceptable use policy on this. Nobody's ever read it. Everybody just hits okay and clicks right through it. But please make sure people are reading through those properly. If they have to go check out a password from the front desk, make sure that, hey, can you read this first? I mean, it's more than just liability. We want to make sure that we're keeping the library safe, and we have to protect those systems. Keeping all of your software, applications, systems, firmware, all of that up to date, and using your endpoints. So you're seeing some reoccurring themes. Again, it's the attackers are playing off of antiquated, outdated software system versions, and they're using vulnerabilities that are being discovered every day to be able to attack those systems, gain access, and then work on any other, any number of actions on objectives that whatever their motivation is. So children, when children come in and they use, children, again, are, as a father of three, I've had to deal with quite a bit of mentoring, again, encouraging, and I've done pretty good on this last one. First two, I failed miserably. Didn't know how to do it. And I what it came down to is I had to learn that kids are curious, and there's no way I was going to keep them off the internet. They were going to find a way to circumnavigate every control I put into place to be able to do that. So really, when it comes here, children have this innate curiosity. They have this sense of innocence, and they're going to find a way to be able to access things and to the questions that they don't want to ask, or they don't want to, they feel ashamed of asking. So they're going to find a way to do that. But we need to make sure that those communication channels are open. From the library's perspective, that's not an easy task. Generally, when you say the word sex or sexting or any of these things that are happening that lead to extortion or others, and it can be a very dangerous conversation to have with somebody else's children. But we have to make sure that we have clear policies in place that say that, you know, this type of content or inappropriate content is not allowed, to make sure that they understand that there is repercussions for that. But again, there's very severe consequences if we don't address that very taboo topic, because that is what we find a lot of. Inappropriate content being accessed, those online enticements, the sexting, the sextortion, cyberbullying, these are things that have led to loss of human life and was easily preventable. Unfortunately, a lot of these happen not at home computers. We find that they're traced back to public places. So public access, so whether or not it be a library or another open access point for Wi-Fi at a coffee shop or within another public meeting spot. These are the type of activities that predators operate from and where their victims generally navigate to be able to have those conversations because they're trying to do it away from prying eyes. So for children here, again, we talked about that innocence, the curiosity, that desire for independence, and there's a fear of punishment, right? So how can you be able to be able to navigate through that and manage it? So as a librarian or a library office, if somebody asks you, like, how do I keep my kid off the internet? There's not an easy answer for that. You could try to keep them off the internet. And that's what I tell parents is you can absolutely try. I failed, you will fail. The first two kids that I had, I was adamant that they weren't gonna have access to it. I did nothing other than make them do it somewhere else. They went and they accessed the internet someplace else like the local library. What I found through my years of trying to be good at cybersecurity is that what I really needed to do was focus on my kid and to build esteem. And the most effective way that I could fight these type of things, these predatory actions and people taking advantage, was to try to build their esteem and to make sure that they weren't looking for validation elsewhere. They weren't looking for something that wasn't, that I was listening to them, I was having open conversations. So if you get the questions from parents or the rest of the community, the best advice that I could give as your cybersecurity advisor is not to keep them from the internet, but to try to do everything you can to make sure that their esteem is being fulfilled and that they're not looking for that validation elsewhere, because that's one of the predatory tactics is they provide that sense of satisfaction or that need, they fill that. And that's how they're able to be able to progress through the relationship, to be able to extort or do more nefarious things within that relationship. So be involved, keep your computers in an open area. Please don't have computers in a isolated room where children or people can be there where they can't be monitored. Set rules, warn about the dangers, make sure that they're aware, monitor the activities, so forth and so forth, right? Parental controls, it's going to be tough. There may be some things you can do like illicit content, but again, if you lock down the computers to the best of your ability within and still allow the research for the rest of the community.
A little note that I think Marilyn agrees with exactly what you said is build up the kids. The kids, the ones that are feel not loved, are the ones that are most likely to.
That's unfortunately, it took me a long time and it would have been a lot easier for the first two. but yeah, absolutely, from personal experience. And even then, my oldest, I can tell a quick story. She graduated with a degree in computer science and she was looking for jobs online and she was going through and she was applying online and she got some responses back. Company based out of Spain, but operated within the US. We looked it up, it was legitimate. She went through three job interviews and then an onboarding interview, filled out everything from tax paperwork to the W-2s, the W-4s. She sent in the banking information for direct deposit. It was all scam. The links they will go to, I still have to fix some drywall in my basement because I had to do an instant response for my little girl. But the links they will go to be able to access that. I mean, little do they know that, you know, she was a broke college student and daddy was a public servant, so they didn't have any money. But so when they got to her account, it was empty and the bank immediately notified us that we've overdrawn. But anyway, it was the links they'll go to are pretty great. Yeah. We have within DHS and within ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, they've got a program called iGuardian, and it's basically just because online predatory activities have led to a lot of death and damage to different children and others. So there's an entire resource area out there within iGuardians to include another entire network. Oh, so what is an online predator? I put this in to try to lighten the mood a little bit for the online predator. It's not so much that, but people that will be out there and they will groom children and they will find it. So they'll exploit all of those things we said before about their curiosity. They'll exploit that. They'll provide things. They'll offer gifts. They'll send things. So what can you look for to be able to manage that? So if they're get, if kids are getting gifts through the mail, if they're getting calls from unknown numbers, like, oh, it's a missed call, Dad. It was just a missed call. It's just a missed call. I don't know why I always get these. Be very suspicious. Be very cautious about those unknown numbers that are showing up periodically. If they're distancing themselves, if they're spending a lot of time online and not a lot of time that's being supervised online, be very suspicious. If they're shutting their screen when you walk in, be very suspicious. And again, you don't want to take it to where you're being disciplinary, but you want to be able to talk to them, make sure they feel comfortable talking to you. At that point, they already have some kind of fear of repercussions. So be very mindful on how you approach that. If you lose your temper and guilty, if you lose your temper right there, that conversation's over. You're not going to be able to get back into it for some time. But again, asking for secrets, blackmail, asking to meet face to face can all lead to this this danger of what happens when they do meet face to face. And there's potential for abduction, for other violent activities. Here within the iGuardian program, here, this is from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children's. They have an entire program out there, an entire website with resources available called NetSmarts. Well, they'll provide parents and families and communities with access to the threats to all of these different things you're seeing here and how to be able to respond, how to talk to your children about it. They have areas for just the children themselves to be able to go through and access and become more secure. They have areas for parents. So it's a very severe and heartbreaking way to be able to spend your day is to be able to go through cybercrime that has led to the abduction or damage or death to a child. So I can't stress enough. It is a very emotional subject for us to talk about from some of the actual content we've seen when we've done forensics or pulled things off of computers to be able to see that how preventable it was and just being able to have those conversations. So,
I have a quick question on that NetSmart. Sure. I haven't seen that before. That's a great resource. Is that something that you just go in and do like kind of on-demand training on?
Yeah.
Okay. So that would be something that would be a great link on children's computers that talk
about. Yeah, it will ask you, and I'll give you a few more resources too. Okay. So this is one, but I wanted to arm you with as many as I can. Again, like I'm trying to focus on my inner librarian. I want to give you as many resources as I can to be able to make sure that you can do what you need to. So that's what I'm trying for today. So NetSmarts is one. Again, when we talk about safety program for children K through 12, again, these three E's, empower, engage, encourage, you know, you want to be able to satisfy that curiosity, that you want to maintain that innocence while you like satisfy that curiosity, right? So you want to empower them, you want to build their esteem, you want to engage with them, you want to be part of it, right? So yeah, you want to find something on the internet? Yeah, let's do it together. Let's engage, let's do it, and let's encourage them to be able to go out there and do it in a healthy way. So when we talk about the so what's, I mean, ransomware attacks right now, every 11 seconds, from our stats, there's one happening. There's an attempt every 11 seconds. Cybersecurity, people believe that it's an IT problem, but really it's everybody's problem. It's a business problem. Cybersecurity is not the IT's responsibility. They have a role in that, but so do you. And everybody needs to understand it, whether or not it's leadership, it's at the CEO level, or the chief fund officer level. They have to promote a culture of cybersecurity throughout the organization. They have to provide governance and oversight. They have to fund cybersecurity. So they have a role and a responsibility, and they have to make sure they're not clicking on links either. So it's not just the IT department. Then you have the line level users, right? So the people that are actually making the business turn, they have roles and responsibilities within cybersecurity too. And then IT has its part to play, but everybody has a role. You have to find what is my role in cybersecurity. Here, every time you use the internet, you're going to face these choices. And there's 5.8 billion users, or 63% of the world's population currently has access or have are active internet users. So if you start looking at what that means for the US, that's a worldwide. I mean, you're talking about some pretty remote areas and regions throughout the world. But for the US, that percentage is going to be much higher than 63%. So if I gave you four things to do, and I just want to make sure, and I think we do a lot of these, we turn on multi-factor authentication where we can. It imposes a lot of costs on an attacker to gain unauthorized access to your system if they have to try to circumnavigate multi-factor authentication. Not only do I have to get your password, I have to steal your phone and then log in with your password and have access to your phone. That's a lot of work for an attacker. Updating software, that's something that those vulnerabilities, the reason we have updates is because they're curing those vulnerabilities. They're mending that system that was able to be exploited, and it was demonstrated to be exploited. So they had to create a patch to be able to deploy to be able to close that vulnerability. So update your software. Please don't delay it. I know it's a pain to restart your computer, but please make sure those are deployed as expeditiously as possible. Think before you click. We don't have to be in a rush on the internet. It doesn't matter how dire the situation is. Your bank isn't going to close your account if you don't respond to them within the next couple hours. Your nephew in the Tijuana prison that you need to send money to, or the prince in Nigeria, don't feel that you have to be able to react immediately. Think about it, ask somebody. And then strong passwords. When you can't do number one, turn on multi-factor, use strong, unique passwords. We talk about passwords. If you look on the left here, you'll see the credential stuffing. If I can get access to an account or username and password on one of your accounts, I will immediately try to reuse that combination of username and password on other accounts. That is what we would call credential stuffing. So if I go out, there's numerous breach reports where a company has been hacked and they have, and you've probably all seen it, you're probably part of Target or one of the other ones where you have credit monitoring through them. But there was a breach report where an attacker was able to harvest username and passwords. For $30, I can go out there on the dark web and buy a list of compromised username and passwords. Likely, those users have been notified, they've changed the username and password on their site, but I still have a list of an old username and password they have. And I'm going to play off the fact that people are reusing usernames and passwords. So now I'll try it on any number of other sites to be able to see whether or not I get access to an account there. And then I can play further into my little attack chain to be able to do other activities to be able to try to get to where my true motivation lies. So using unique passwords for every different website prevents the credential stuffing. I know that means you have to use a lot of different passwords that you have to remember, but it is very much worth it because that is a very common attack technique we have to defeat every day.
I wanted to point out a little bit of
DHS humor.
One other thing on the previous slide for the two-factor authentication. I know some of you know this because you're our customers, so I know you know it. Some of the others though, libraries are now qualify as academic for Office 365 licenses, which means you can get a free Office 365 A3 license, I think, for all of your employees. So we still see a lot of libraries using random Gmail accounts, just non-managed. And that's kind of a huge risk because for one, it's hard to turn on multi-factor. If they turn it on, you can't get it into it. That's a free option for libraries these days. So my recommendation is if you haven't switched to using that, talk to your IT provider about that because you can turn on two-factor authentication for the library accounts. And once hackers get into your email, they can do a lot of other things because then they can reset passwords using your email and that sort of thing. So that's something that just as in the last year is really, I think, changed the landscape of email for libraries as a cheap solution. So,
yeah, one of the common things I see right now is if somebody gets access to an email, Like if I were to get into one of the library workers' emails, I'm not going to do anything with their account. I'm going to send out an email from their account to everybody in their address list asking for something else, because I can either work really hard to kind of work that one account, or I can just fish and cast a much wider net across their entire access list. And that can be pretty dangerous. Ken?
No questions, I think.
Okay, so I must be doing good. Libraries, what can we do? Again, CISA has a lot of free services as well. They're all at no cost. If you wanted to do a tabletop exercise and go through a cybersecurity or a physical security scenario, again, that's within the realm of possible. If you want us to do vulnerability scanning, so that's external scanning to see what a vulnerability, any vulnerabilities that are open to the internet, that's a free service. You'll get weekly reports. If you want to sign up for our national cyber alert system, that's going to be more of getting threat information on certain bulletins, advisories, things that we're seeing actively exploited. We also perform cybersecurity assessments, so we can come in and do that as well. Again, there's never any real sense there. Nobody has anything to gain when it comes to competition and cybersecurity. But if you're looking for services, you want to reach out, the federal government does offer quite a few through CISA. And those are things that you can always reach out to me for, or you can go to the website and you can see whether or not there's something there that you wanted to be able to entertain or know more about. For additional resources, so a lot of the things I talked about today are going to be on this slide. Everybody will get several of these slides. I'll take out a few of them. But here you'll see staying safe on social networking sites, keeping kids safe online, the four things you can do to keep yourself cyber safe. There's a little bit more information. Here you see information from my friends at the FBI, where you'll have what that is the violent crime against children. What you'll see is the very end of that URL there on the fourth bullet down. Here on the FBI, you also see how to report cyber criminal activity. The iGuardians we talked about, the NetSmarts, again, there's the link to be able to get to that one, Lisa, cyberbullying.org. The FOSI is the, I always forget this one, Family Online Safety Institute. And then also here within the state of Indiana, the state government, here you have the Indiana Cybersecurity Hub. There's going to be information there for individuals. You can do assessments. There's for community. There's family. So the state's also done a lot of great work. So there's a lot of different resources to be able to go through, to be able to get information. A lot of it is going to be repetitive. A lot of it's going to be redundant. If you hear Dady say it, or if you hear Lisa say it, and they're all saying the same thing, there's probably a good amount of truth that that's something you need to pay attention to. So with that, let's see. I think that was the last one. I promised that I would give you my slides, and I've got 2 minutes left, but I guess no questions.
I don't think there are any questions at this point. I am very happy to say, you know, when I was talking to Brian before this, he's like, you know, we don't have any idea what he's going to say. So I hope we do those things, since that's kind of our job. And I'm very happy to see that what you said to do, we do with our customers. So that was a shoo. I mean,
with the last thing I ever want to see anybody do is, and this is another thing, a trap that you can fall into to that point, Lisa, is that you can easily overinvest in cybersecurity.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of times that people will put far too many resources because of fear. We want to right size it. We can lock down everything and it never becomes accessible. And you would have the worst library where you couldn't access any information because it's all behind locked doors. So we have to balance that. And that's all the risk management piece. And we do a lot of risk assessments. So not so many of the cybersecurity vulnerability or risk, the cyber vulnerabilities, we do those, but we also focus a lot more on risk and right-sizing your risk investment.
Yeah.
So that's where I spend a lot of my time.
That's exactly what we see. And actually, your plan was pretty much what our library management does. So I was very happy to see that. I mean, we spend a lot of time listening and talking to cybersecurity experts and people like you, but it was good to see that we're doing the right thing. So
I think you guys are doing fantastic then. I mean, I'm always happy to come in and talk more.
Yeah, we'll have to set up something.
Yeah, if you have concerns or if you have questions or you need an objective third party, right? If that's what it is, I need somebody to confirm that's not part of the organization. Please let me know. I mean, I will definitely give my opinion, and I think a lot of times those they're not going to collide. They're going to run parallel to one another. So
exactly. Well, I thank everybody for attending. Thank you, JD. I think this was, very informational. There was a lot of things on there that I actually see. I will probably suggest to our libraries to put as resources for their children and internet security type things. So I thank you. I thank everybody else for attending. I think we'll get the slides from JD that he's willing to share, and we'll send those out as a follow-up. So if anybody has questions, let me know. And thanks, everybody. Thank you, JD.
No, absolutely. I'm going to go ahead and all the resource slides and most of those things are going to be included. All the content and everything is available through those links.
All right. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
All right. Take care.
Bye.